Hey everybody, welcome back to the podcast. This is show number 69, and this week's guest is Rudolph Crane. Rudolph comes to talk to us about his homemade auto exposure pinhole camera. Hey everybody, welcome back to the podcast. This is show number 69, Andrew, 6x9. How are you?
Well, I'm very well. Yeah, I'm glad you made a sensible comment relating to film formats. I thought you were going to say something else for the moment.
No.
For show 69. 6x9. So we're in one of my favorite formats.
Yeah.
So 6x9.
Yeah, I like 6x9 too. Yeah, I do. Yep. So how's your week been? You been up to anything exciting?
Oh, well, I hesitate to mention it. I used to get the mickey taken out of me for mentioning salt prints every week. But now I mention hotel ghosts.
Yeah, right.
So,
it's all right.
Yeah, I made a few more. I'm trying to just move the project on a bit, because I still the theme, of course, is to still reflect my how I feel about living in hotels for the last 30 years. So, but part of that, it's not all about the hotel room, it's about the corridor and the elevator and the breakfast room. No, you mentioned pool, didn't you? But I don't stay in many places with swimming pools. And certainly not outdoor ones. But it's not a bad idea. If there were one occasionally, but I've always got it with me, and normally with HP 5 in, because that makes the exposures a bit more bearable.
Yeah.
But I was up in Scotland earlier in the week by Holy Island. It's called Lindisfarne. It's really beautiful, Corey. If you ever come to the UK, then the northeast coast is fantastic.
You did it.
And I did a few more pinhole ghosts. That's about it, really. You've been pinholing this week?
Not so much. I got a lot of film developed and got a lot of stuff scanned. So I had to kind of put some energy into that and get it kind of caught up, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I got that done. I got some pictures sent to Daniel. So we have a little zine that we're making, which is going to be hopefully coming out soon. So I kind of put some energy into that and got it finished. And then just worked, but I haven't got to do much shooting this week. It's been raining, too. We seem to go from these extremes. It goes from dry and been dry all summer to all of a sudden we're just having days and days and days of rain, you know. So
global warming, mate.
Yeah.
I know your man doesn't believe in it, but yeah, you wait until you're all under 10 feet of water, then you'll
walk around
you'll be believers.
You wait till everyone's the end of their jeans is soaking wet the last 3 inches, you know, it's flogging around everywhere. Yeah, so that's been about it for me. But
okay,
yeah. So, we've had quite a few interesting camera builders on the show in the past, and this week we have Rudolph Crane, who makes an automatic exposure a pinhole camera. So it basically has a meter. So Rudolph, how are you?
Hello. How are you?
Good.
It's a pleasure to be here with you guys. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for coming and talking about your camera, because when I first saw it, I was like, wow, this, you know, just it's just really cool. I'm super interested in it.
It's got to be the craziest thing I've ever seen, I think, really.
No, I don't know. I've seen some pretty crazy stuff, so. But
well, when you mentioned, because I wasn't, you, Rudolph, I wasn't aware of your creations until Corey pointed them out.
Yes.
And I thought, what? Automatic exposure pinhole camera?
Wow. Yeah. It's almost against the purity of pinhole, but I find it exciting.
I love the contrast with, you know, the pinhole and then having a meter and kind of, you know, I think it's
seems
like the next logical step in some capacity, because boxes are only boxes for so much, and we naturally want to like improve a box, you know.
So many people use the Pinhole Assist app,
yeah.
which effectively, from what I can see, and you can tell us more about it in a bit, Rudolph, but from what I can see, you know, you've effectively got bits of the Pinhole Assist app kind of thing in your cameras along, you know, so that's effectively how it works. But you can tell us all a bit
about like that.
Yeah. Well, I never claimed to be an expert in these things or in anything really, come to that matter.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't know.
But so are you a pinhole or a photographer, a pinhole photographer or a photographer first, or a camera builder first?
I think I started with photography first, and then I got, you know, started when I was very young, and then I got interested in medium format and then in large format, and then I started experimenting with alternative processes and got into camera building a long, long time ago for the art of it and the science and the just to make a beautiful piece that is functional, and I'll be able to make art with it.
So. I think it's what a lot of you guys who make beautiful cameras and beautiful photographic things. A lot what you have in common. Very often, you've got a kind of technical or engineering background. The photography becomes an artistic sort of outlet. And eventually, the two just have to clash and come together.
Absolutely, I'm an engineer. Yes, so
yeah. So there you go.
I was cool. I was talking just Friday to Jason Lane, and Jason is one of the guys behind the new Kickstarter that's out for dry plate holders. It's tied up with a Chroma camera, and Jason is a lens designer. And he's actually got lenses that are up on the space station going around the world.
Wow, that's pretty cool.
And he makes dry plates for, you know, for large format or for your pinhole camera, funnily enough. So, and, you know, he's a technical guy and a creative guy, and he gets his kicks out of image making, and the two just come together. So that's the common denominator, I think, with all these mad camera builders.
Yeah. Well, Rudolph, why don't you just take a second and maybe kind of let everybody know the basis of what you're doing and kind of the idea of what you created.
Yeah. So here's the bottom line: why I created this. Where did this idea come from? And I like to travel. And a lot of the images you might see that I make are from different all over the U.S. and from travels abroad in Asia or Europe. And the one thing that I hated was to go out, spend all this time in the creative process, and then have a faulty exposure. So I thought, if I'm going to invest so much time and effort into creating an image, I don't want to not have the perfect exposure.
Sure.
So that took me to research if there was anything that I could do. There was this guy from Australia, John Fletcher, that created an exposure system that for pinhole cameras. And I remember my wife was not happy about the amount of money I spent on his system, because it was a custom made electronics years, decades, probably before the Arduino movement. And I got it, and it worked perfectly, and it was amazing. And then it broke.
And, then, and as things do,
and then I contacted him, and he said, "Well, I haven't done this in ages. I don't have time to do anything. I'm sorry." So I decided to figure it out myself.
Right,
and I love the maker movement, the maker fairs, and then other platforms started happening, like outsourcing, Upwork and other places. So I started hiring people. I went through about 8 electronics designers and maybe 12 CAD designers to help me bring the camera functionality and the box together. And it never worked until I changed the tone. I said, I'm going to find an algorithm designer, somebody that has a PhD in mathematics that can actually code in C. And it took me about 6 months, and I found someone, bright individual from India, and he merged the two. He was a very good mathematician. He was not a great coder, but he's got me started. And then I hired somebody else to fix the code. So it's been almost 3 years, almost 4 years maybe, of making this camera work. And now I have it to a point where it's working. And it takes good exposures. What's it supposed to do?
Yeah, I'm looking at the images, and it takes great exposure. So how did you – do you just have it set up to on an electronic shutter? I mean, you know, it seems like you have the 4x5 version where it just kind of sits on top of the camera, and I'm assuming there's just like a simple plate that drops, you know, and acts as the shutter. Is that
– Yeah, yeah. So
not simple, but you know what I mean.
The mechanism is a simple servo motor. You know, they're sort of cheap and accurate and for what I need.
Yeah.
But behind the scenes, there's a light meter, and then you have a processor. And what in a nutshell, what this camera does, or what this system does, is it takes light. A light reading every second, and it calculates the amount of exposure it needs. It calculates reciprocity, everything. It puts everything, and then it has an additive function. Hence, you needed a mathematician to figure this out, because every single second, it calculates a percentage of exposure. So if the light suddenly, I mean, if you're outside and you have a 4x5 camera and you have a long focal length, the exposures might be an hour, right?
Sure.
And your light conditions might change.
Mm-hmm.
So the camera system will adjust for that.
Wow.
So it calculates every second, and it knows like what percentage of exposure you achieved during that second.
Wow.
And so if it suddenly gets brighter, then
it'll cut it off.
It's going to just reduce some of the overall time.
Yes.
Wow. Now, I'm aware of that phenomenon. Over long, I take some pictures in our local church, and it was one of those days where the clouds were going over the sun, and the exposure was, at one point when I sort of metered it up, was probably about 20 minutes or so. And then the sun went in, and I thought, That's probably another stop. It's probably doubled it, you know.
Yes.
And then it came, and then the sun came out again. I thought, I have no idea, really. Yeah. So you just kind of guess.
Yeah.
And hope.
So it, one of the first prototypes I made, it was, like 4 years ago, and I took the camera, 40 pounds of equipment, and I took it to Boston, and you know, Boston is cloudy and there's a lot of Drury, so I had long exposures, and every single shot came out great. So
nice.
That was the goal. You to focus on what's important.
So you're take us from the early stages then, because I notice on the on your website, which is pin-shot.com, you've got a 6x12 panoramic prototype version 3. So that's a standalone camera, isn't it? So that is that where yes. you started? Is that so? What was version 1 like? And maybe tell us about some of the difficulties you encountered, because this wasn't a quick process, was it?
No, it's been kind of slow. So the very first camera, I did like a camera lens board with the shutter included, and that was designed with wood. And I had, that was my first partner in electronics. And it had an LCD with a type of just buttons, and you would go over, and every time you wanted to change the settings of focal length and pinhole diameter and film, you had to go through a big long process. And so that was the first one, and then I wanted to create a standalone camera with the same electronics, with the same system, and it had a lot of issues with Film Advanced. That camera actually has a nice story. When I started publishing, there was some interest, and this person from France, she wanted to know more about it, and I said, well, I'll be happy to send the camera for you to try out. And she couldn't believe it, and I just shipped it. And I said, all I can ask is that you just pass it around. So it kind of passed around, and it was kind of a failure because of the Film Advance. It was so complex that nobody really wanted to deal with it. So that prompted me to go back to the drawing board and redesign the whole thing. And then I got interested into 3D printing, and my original designer quit on me and never gave me the design files for the electronics. So I had to start from scratch and take a deep dive into the math and to the reciprocity equations and how everything worked. How do you convert the light reading that's in lux into a light reading that's meaningful for photography? So I don't know how, but I got the equation somewhere. and so everything was built from scratch again. Had to start, I mean, everything. And that's when I got this PhD mathematician that codes in C, and a great designer from Bulgaria that's helped me come up with a standalone camera and with the light meter box that's on the side.
Yeah.
And I've gone through so many iterations to make this work that it's crazy.
Well, I'm sure that the math and figuring out everything for the shutter speeds was enough, but at least you didn't have to worry about, I'm assuming, really, really fast. I mean, you know, like a quarter of a second, you know, it'll handle really long exposures, I'm sure. But I mean, what's the fastest shutter speed that it's able to do?
I think that, so that's the limit. It's the fast shutter speeds. I think that the slowest I have tagged it, I'm sorry, the fastest is half a second.
Right.
It cannot go any faster. The mechanics of the servo are just very limiting.
Yeah.
And the I'm staring at the large format lens board attachment. So you've got a sort of lens board with a circular pinhole, which I think looks like it rotates. You can tell me in a minute. And then on top of it is the electronic gizmo. With your controls.
The gizmo?
Yeah. So I read somewhere on your website, or maybe it was on the YouTube video, So obviously with a large format camera, you can compress the bellows and change. I hesitate to use that term. People, just close your ears. Focal length, but you know what I'm talking about, the film to pinhole distance. So have you got different pinholes in this camera? It seemed to suggest that you could change the aperture of the pinhole somehow.
Yes. So in the design philosophy is maximum versatility.
Mm-hmm.
So I can change everything. And the version you're looking at, that's the primitive version, that was cumbersome. So the newest version has a touch screen, and I build like presets, like my most common presets. One of the cameras I took on my last trip to China, it's like a small baby Graflex. Mm-hmm. And then I bought this pinhole roulette. It's like a shutter that has 8 different pinholes from Bix camera.
Yeah.
It's just incredible. So with the Graflex, I can have 3 different good focal lengths. And with my system, I have them preset. And I'm going to be publishing some pictures where I am standing from my hotel, and I take 3 pictures with 3 different focal lengths. And just to make sure that the system works, creates a good exposure at any focal length, like just for comparison. And pictures came out great.
Cool.
Sorry, your question on the lenses. Yes, I have a separate design to change lenses and put whatever focal length you want.
Yeah. Wow. So, what's powering this? Is it a AA battery, or do you have a solar panel?
Nuclear power, I think.
Now, the original camera had like 6 AA batteries.
Gotcha.
The newest version has lithium batteries, rechargeable, and a recharging circuit.
Right. Yeah, wow, that's crazy.
And you've got a little screen on the back, haven't you? My only concern with that is how does that fare up when you're outside and the sun's shining down? Is that easy to read? Because you kind of rely on that.
It looks pretty bright.
Yeah. It is pretty bright. Actually, those screens you can adjust for the brightness. But I mean, I've been using this camera without issue. I've taken some pictures in Death Valley where the sun is blazing, and without issue.
So, right.
I mean, I'm not going to say it's going to be super easy, but it's not impossible.
Well, you make a very good point in the video that, of course, you've got what's in effect a basic meter. It's not matrix metering. So if you're a DSLR fan and you think that this thing is going to be looking at different spots around the around the image scene and then integrating those readings into a inverted commas best exposure, then you're wrong. It's taking I don't know what kind of angle of view it's looking at, Rudolph, but it's taking an average, isn't it? So
it's gray, right?
Yeah. So you've got some. I was looking in the gallery, which I think probably where you've given cameras to folks around the world, Coast and Beach, which I just think are a great set of images, and they're tricky. You know, they're tricky light conditions because beaches are notoriously difficult. You know, you've got a couple stood there, and they're perfectly exposed, and the background's perfectly exposed, and you've got some movement in the water, and you know, I would be over the moon to get an exposure like that. But in circumstances like that, where you know you've got sunlight coming through the cloud in the background, that's a classic example of where, you know, your camera meter is going to suggest that you need a faster shutter speed than you really do. Mm-hmm. So would you have to go in and sort of add a stop in the sort of compensation section?
Well, that's probably where, like, I was going to say exposure compensation would come in.
Well, there is in the website, there is the function of exposure compensation, and it shows what it does. Mm-hmm. But yes, I have plus minus three stops.
Oh, that's a lot.
For exposure compensation.
That's going to cope with most situations, isn't it?
Sure.
It will, yes. And the other function I have here, I mean, there are people that might want to choose their pinhole with a different constant. So I have it as a default to rally, but there are three others that you can choose, the golden ratio or zone zero's number. And it will change the optimum pinhole or optimum focal length for that pinhole. The other thing that can change, you can in the system, you can change the distance from lens to your subject, and that will also affect mathematically what's the optimum pinhole. So if you want to take like a macro shot, and your exposure is going to be on a macro level, very close, it will affect what's your optimum pinhole. So you can do all that in the system.
Wow. Huh. Even you can do it, Andrew.
Yeah, it's foolproof. Well, I don't know. Maybe it looks pretty foolproof. It's awesome, really. I'm, you know, happy with a box with a pinhole in it, but I can see how your pictures are great, and it clearly works, and so can I ask what a standalone pin shot sells for typically, and all the ones that go on the large format cameras?
I haven't given a thought to that.
Right,
right now, I'm very
doing it
focused
for
on doing it for me and making it sure it works.
Okay.
Yeah.
And if there would be any interest, I would of course entertain.
Yeah.
I didn't know whether you were making these with a view to sort of commercializing it or just for the sheer fun of it.
Yeah.
There are two ways of looking at this. The camera is complex, and I do not have time or resources to build this.
Yeah,
I'm making a much simpler version for large format cameras, where it's a box with an attachment that with a lens board, and those are simple, or more simple to make. And those might be easier to manufacture, but I'm debating between, like, if I launch it somehow, it would definitely have to be a combination of commercial and open sourcing, and because it's there's people that want to tweak with it, and I want to learn from them, and they can learn from me.
Sure. Yeah, yeah. One of the things I was just interested, you know. I just really wanted to know a little bit more about it, you know. So
you're traveling all over the world, though, aren't you? Are you? Does your job day job at Rudolph take you all over the world?
No, my.
Was it just holidays?
Yes, it's. We've been fortunate and we're able to travel, and we love to travel and.
Mm-hmm.
And I travel with a big, heavy backpack, and the family okay with that.
You must, even more so with, you know, you've got a large format camera there with, they attract attentions, but you must get folks coming up to you and say, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Do you get policemen coming up to you and say, what are you doing?
You know,
with the 4x5 more so than the little gray one, I would imagine.
Yeah.
The little gray one looks more kind of like a, something that you normally see. Sorry, I didn't interrupt you, Rudolph.
So a funny anecdote. Coming into China 3 months ago, I'm carrying my camera with a couple of bags and all my things. And they had never seen the young people at the airport, the security people, have never seen film. So I have to explain, I have to pull my phone and explain like film and translation and pictures of film. And then they understand, oh, camera. So they want me to take a picture and show the picture to them from the actual Mamiya 6x7 back. It's like, right. I'm sorry, there is no picture here. It's there's no film in it either. So
Yeah, right. That's I haven't had that problem traveling internationally, but
well, Corey doesn't have a passport.
every time I break out my camera somewhere, though, you know, it's kind of like, you know, just it's like a magnet, and you know, people are always just like, "What are you doing? What's that?" You know, and then you got to explain it to them. And so yeah. I can see how that would be frustrating. It's easier with the 4x5 though, because you can just take the back off and show them the pinhole, you know. And yeah, then they kind of get it. Oh, okay, you know what I mean? But yeah, so. So traveling with this thing as a bear, then, huh? I mean, it's got to be with the 4x5 field camera. Were you using a Graflex, you said?
Yeah, I for this last trip, I took a Graflex.
What do you...
baby Graflex.
What's your... so that's shooting like 3.25 by 3.25, something like that, isn't it?
I used the 6x7 Mamiya back. Yeah.
I got you. Do you, what's your film of choice? What do you like to shoot with? I see because you have paper negatives and you have all kinds of images on your webpage under the galleries and whatnot, you know. So do you prefer paper to film or?
You know, I have every size of camera. So on 8x10s, I choose paper because it's cheap.
Yeah.
But, I love my favorite format is 5x7. It's just perfect for me.
Yeah,
it's a good combination of a very large negative with not a big camera.
Yeah, you hear that a lot, don't you? Five, you know, in terms of a compromise. Well, it's not really a compromise. It's 4x5 is nice, but if you want something you can just contact print nicely and still be a reasonable size, 5x7 is in many people's eyes the one of the perfect large format. You know, it's not as big as an 8x10, is it?
Yes.
Have you tried any wet plate or dry plate stuff? Does that idea interest you, Rudolph?
It interests me, and I have not tried any of that.
Because you play around with Polaroid, or you have done. Are these your Polaroid images, or are these other people's shots?
No, they're mine.
Yeah. So have you still got a stash of Polaroid? Most of all mine's gone now.
You don't have to answer that question if you don't want to, Rudolph.
It's gone. It's gone.
Mind you could probably sell it now to fund a few trips around the world.
Yeah, yes. Right.
Yeah, I would love to be able to afford a converted back, but they're pricey. So
yeah. I saw there's somebody bringing out a back for the Instax Square for the RB67. Did you see that on?
But they're expensive. So
they're still a few $100s, I think, aren't they?
Sure, more than a few.
Is that Lamography's doing that now?
I think it was somebody was posting about it. I don't know. Hmm. I don't know who it was. I think it's
Cat Labs or so. There's a couple of people doing it, and yes. I will go on their website and drool a little bit and then and then move on.
Yeah, right. Yeah, sure.
So that's interesting. So on your website, you've got some exposure adjustments and bracketing examples.
I was just looking at that too.
Yeah, exposure adjustment and bracketing examples is that? Oh, I see. So image one, this is great radio, folks, but you know what we're like. No adjustment. If you want to understand a little bit about exposure and how meters are not clever, they're just trying to make everything grey, then go to this page because it says there's a white building. Image number one, no adjustment. Notice how the exposure tends to go grey. Yeah. And number two, plus one EV. So you're starting to shift those tones up a bit and it's a bit whiter. And number three, another stop, I think.
Two stops,
so it gets two stops, and then it gets to where you would expect it to be.
I mean, the system is a great tool, but it, as you mentioned earlier, it's not a matrix meter that will know what scene it is. It's not a Nikon F6.
Yeah.
So you need to know what you're shooting and what adjustments you need to make.
Right. So you're doing, I see here that you pre-flashed this for these contact prints. Are you able to do a lot of contact printing, Rudolph? Do you have a little dark room and you're...
I have a bathroom that I darken.
Hey,
so
that's good enough.
That's good enough.
Technically, that's a dark room. We're calling that a dark room.
Yes.
What other cameras have you built over the years, Rudolph?
For the most part, it has been my pinholes of different formats, different materials. I will repair bellows on like the big ones, or strip them off and repaint them for fun. Mm-hmm. But that's that's about it. I mean, pinholes.
Yep. Have you ever made a self-developing camera?
No.
You're probably thinking, what's this fool talking about? Corey, is it okay for me to talk about this now?
Can I
talk?
Go ahead.
Because I think Rudolph might be kind of interested, and we might.
Speaking of leading into developing your images in a camera.
Yeah, so there's this other podcast, Rudolph, which you, if you don't listen to it, you
might
do.
Be interested.
Yeah, the Homemade Camera Podcast. And that's there's three guys on there. There's Graham Young and Nick Lyle and Ethan Moses. And they're all camera builders in some degree or another. They all come at it from a slightly different angle.
Hang on, we're fast, Andrew. So if you haven't heard of them, Rudolph, they're probably getting in contact with you because they're camera builder fanatics.
Well,
you know?
I follow the camera builders and different do-it-yourself camera places.
Well, go subscribe to the Homemade Camera Podcast and in their most recent, I think it's their most recent show, or certainly a very recent one. They were talking about the Afghan camera, and previous guest on our show just a couple of weeks ago was talking about Afghan cameras or cameras where there's a box and you develop the paper inside the camera. So you end up.
They were the Minotera.
Minotera,
that's what it was.
Yeah, so the concept of that camera and Nick and Ethan devote a whole show pretty much to this concept of what's most commonly known as the Afghan box camera. So they were used by street portrait artists, and you would have you could through a red window you can kind of focus on the paper on the film plane and move it backwards and forwards. You can then make your exposure of the person. You can develop the paper, and then using a copy stand attachment, you can re-photograph it and develop it. And you end up with effectively, it's an instant camera, but, you know, not Polaroid.
Yeah.
And so on the Homemade Camera Podcast, they were talking about this, and they were talking about how they could different ideas and designs they could come up with for making what would be called self-developing cameras. And pinhole kept coming up because what they were saying was one of the most simple ones. If you took a developing tank, like a Patterson Black developing tank, and you stuck a pinhole in on the side of it, you could put your paper in, make your exposure, and then pour your chemicals in, and you've got a self-developing camera at its most simple. But or you could go the whole way to the Afghan camera. Now, the Lensless Podcast. Really, not me and Corey, because we're hopeless, but our listeners have been kind of challenged by the Homemade Camera Podcast. And we've been challenged to see what clever folks who listen to the Lensless Podcast and who take part in our Facebook group, what what they can come up with, and can they come up with a self-developing camera? Now, at the end of this podcast, Corey, you're going to drop in a little a clip. I say a little clip. It's it goes on a bit, but it's basically Ethan and Nick talking about this idea of the self-developing camera and saying that listeners of the Lensless podcast might want to join in with this and share results as they go along, listen to the Homemade Camera podcast. And then sometime in November, we're going to do some kind of joint show, probably, and see what folks come up with. But, you know, I look at the Lensless podcast Facebook group most days, and people are making awesome cameras. And many of them I know listen to the Homemade Camera podcast. So the challenge to our listeners from the Homemade Camera podcast is self-developing cameras. And it could be really simple, like a developing tank with a pinhole in, or it could be something much more complicated.
Then I have no idea to give you an example for
it. No, but if you listen to those shows, it's either show 30 or 31 that those guys put out. They talk about lots of different ideas, you know, but they're mad. They're crazy, you know.
Actually, a couple of years ago, somebody that does wet collodion inquired about could I adapt the system to a wet collodion, because the ISO of wet collodion, I think they rated between one and six.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a pretty slow process.
Yeah.
And I said, yeah, I mean, it's just a matter of focal length and aperture. So,
cool.
So would you be interested in making a self-developing camera, Rudolph? You sound like,
sounds like it's
right up your street.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think the only thing I could probably do, I was thinking today as I was outside, I've got one of those Patterson tanks, but this is a huge Patterson tank. It's about a meter tall. Do you know the ones, Corey? I've no idea how many reels it takes.
Yeah, like four.
More than that. I mean, this is...
It depends on what you're shooting, though, because I have a tank that'll do one 120, two 35, and then I have one that'll do two 120s, and that'll be four 35 millimeter reels.
Well, I'm thinking what I can do with that. The trouble is, if I put one pinhole halfway down, the light fall off to the end is going to be...
Yeah.
If I put like a piece of film in from the top to the bottom, it's a big old tank. But maybe I could put more than one pinhole in somehow.
Yeah.
And
You've got me thinking now, yeah. Because what if you took a 5-gallon bucket, put a hole in the side of it for the pinhole, put your paper in it, came up with a way for a spout, then you could put like 16 by 20 in it and just put like 500 milliliters laying
you
on
could.
The side
well, you,
and then
you,
just roll it
yeah,
around.
Yeah, that's what they were talking about. So you don't have to fill, you know, if you'd made a pinhole camera out of a dustbin, you wouldn't have to fill it up with like 20 gallons of developer. You could put like, you know, half a liter or something in and swish it around, couldn't you? Like a Jobo roller developing thing.
The problem would
you've got to come up with a light trap. Well, at the very least, you could, if you've got a spare Patterson light trap, you can just stick that onto a hole that you drill in the top of the...
Yeah, but where are you going to get a spare Patterson? You have to cut a tank down, for sure.
Yeah, but people have things, you know, I mean, I've got loads of these things lying around in the dark room.
Such,
I do, yeah.
Do you really?
folks out there, you know, or you could, I don't know how you make a light trap spout, but, you know, the easy thing for me is, well, you've already got one, because there's these ones that screw on. The Patterson did a design which screws onto thread, so not the clicker. Yeah, they did one that screw on. So that you could probably stick on with light-proof tape and still have it at the end to put back in your developing tank.
Yeah, that's a good idea. I didn't think about that. You could probably still come up with something for the click system too, I imagine, with some caulking or something to put around it, you know? Yeah. Maybe I will try and do it.
But if you... The Patterson tank that most people have is the one with the funnel in, and it clicks around, and then you put the sort of rubberized top on.
Yeah.
But I do have another one which has got a screw top, and it's Patterson, and they must have made different versions of these things. But this actually screws on, so you could take the screw off bit and cut a hole in the top of the tank, and then just with you know, lightproof tape, secure it to the top of your camera. That would work.
That's about as
complicated as I could get, I think, really.
Yeah, if I do something, it's going to be something along those lines.
You're not going to build an Afghan camera, are you, really?
Probably not.
No.
A shoebox.
So there we are. So that's the challenge. Listen to the end of the show and listen to the drop-in audio that we'll put in. And go away and listen to the Homemade Camera
podcast. Nick? Is that Nick on that, or is it Ethan from Cameron?
No, Ethan starts off the audio, and then Nick says something.
Yeah.
And then I think it's Nick and Ethan then talking to each other. I don't think Gray. I didn't listen to all of it because, to be honest, it was going on a bit. Sorry, guys. So I don't know if Gray. Maybe it's going on a bit because Graham suddenly chips in and he doesn't stop talking, does he?
He's definitely enthusiastic.
Yeah, he is. Yeah. No, they're all lovely people. And as long as I don't have to build anything complicated, I might give it a go. But it'll be with a developing tank.
Now that I'm thinking about it, I can use... why couldn't you do it with the empty paint cup? You can go and get like a quart container from a hardware store for just a couple bucks, you know, put a pinhole in it.
I would make your own pinhole because you don't want to risk taking it. It's going to get ruined. And then cover it over. You obviously got to cover it over with a bit of waterproof tape or something, lightproof tape, so that you can...
Well, no, if you washed it when you got done, immediately after it, I don't think it would be that bad if you let it sit there for, you know.
They were talking about a shutter design in the podcast with a curved paint tin design. If you had a piece of curved metal sitting immediately behind the pinhole and somehow coming up through the top, you could sort of lift it up and drop it back down again, and then you've made like a little shutter, haven't you?
I like the idea of just having the blackout tape over the pinhole, you know? And just make sure you don't roll that part of it down. You know, like
if you don't roll that part of it down, then you're not going to ruin your pinhole. But you've got to stick your finger over the hole, or go out and buy some tape.
Tape up your hole.
Tape up your hole. Yeah, don't start that.
Okay. All right.
Do you want to hear? So we start last week. We started a very popular, Well, I think it's popular anyway. Very popular section called News from the Facebook Group. So should I go with a few shout outs from the Facebook group, Corey?
Yeah, because I haven't checked.
I think it was your turn, really, but I'm not sure how enthusiastic you are.
I haven't looked at it in a week, so I can news from Facebook group.
I only looked at it about 5 minutes before we recorded and just flicked through to watch some interesting things. So from the top, I've just shared a link into the Lenses podcast Facebook group for the Chromagraphica dry plate Kickstarter. And if you haven't already looked at that, do so. If you do 4-5 pinhole, then glass plate pinholes. Yeah. You can go and you can buy ISI 2 glass plates ready made.
ISI.
What did I say? ASA, ISO, whatever. 2 or 25 speed. Jason Lane makes them. He sells them. He's one of the mastermind behind the Kickstarter with Steve Lloyd of Chroma Cameras. So they're making an affordable dry plate holder, which you can also use to put your film in. They're going to make a little adapter so you don't just have to use it for glass plates, you can use it for film.
Sure.
So and then you can buy plates, and Jason sells these things for about $40 for 10 glass plates ready coated with ortho. So you've got your ortho plates there, Corey, you know, like Ilford Ortho. So these have much the same response.
Hey, you know what
if
I use the Ilford Ortho 4x5 film that I have, I could make my paint can camera, develop it inside the camera, and just have it under a red light and dump the chemistry out and just take the lid off and dump it in. You don't even have to.
You could. Or you could have a piece of red glass over the top of your camera, and then when you pull your developer in, you can watch how you're developing the paper or the film. So you're getting good coverage. You can actually watch the developing process.
Watch the magic.
So, because that's one of the Afghan cameras uses a glass window, doesn't it? So you can see a red glass. And Neil Piper made a red pinhole camera, didn't he?
Yeah.
Red glass.
I'm thinking about this. Maybe I can't. Maybe I might be able to put a little bit of time into that.
Anyway, look,
go ahead. Sorry.
News from the Facebook group. Dan Novak posted some pictures using Harman Direct Positive paper, and it's I'm still struggling with Harman Direct Positive, folks. So if you want to share your images and your tricks of the trade to the Facebook group, follow Dan's example and share pictures of Harman Direct Positive, please.
If you'd like to purchase some Harman Direct Positive, I have quite a few boxes of it.
You can sell it to me. You can send it to me. Greg, following last week's chat, Greg Obst posted earlier in the week a link to where you can go and get your copies of scanned copies of British Journal of Photography. So if you want, you can go back and look online at old BJP annuals if you haven't got a proper old-fashioned book of the BJP. Exciting. So Greg posted a link to that. And one more. Oh, yeah. Harry Scott shared an Excel file and a PDF with some pinhole calculations on it. So I think you can use it if you're using a meter. You can use this spreadsheet if that helps you. Go and check it out. I didn't really look at it too much, but it was somebody who was sharing something interesting. So thanks, Harry, for sharing that to the Facebook group.
Mm-hmm. Thanks,
Harry. So that's the end of news from the Facebook group.
We've got to come up with a better intro for it, though. You still there, Rudolph?
I'm here.
We haven't bored you. We're all getting excited.
You're putting to sleep, Andrew. Come on. You're trying to put people to sleep.
We're all getting excited about self-developing cameras now.
Yeah. So
I like. I think you're painting with some red Safelite glass in or something.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Across the top.
I might do something like that. Yeah, I might jump in. I wonder if... then you could do... and you know what? Actually, if you did an anamorphic camera and the pinhole was in the lid, and you did the ortho film, you wouldn't even get your pinhole wet.
Your hole would stay dry through the whole process.
Yep. Maybe I will do that.
If you can possibly keep your hole dry, then it's always for the best, I find.
But I wonder if they're like, I wonder if you can use safe lights and stuff, or does it have to be self-contained, like you have to be able to just do it in daylight, you know?
I don't know. If you've got any questions, ask Nick.
Ask Nick.
Or Graham or Ethan.
At the Homemade Camera Podcast.
Yeah, have we given them enough plug?
One more time. Now? Find out more information at the Homemade Camera Podcast.
Yeah, they have a website, homemadecamerapodcast.com.
Yep.
There you go.
Good, great chaps. Is that what you got to say, Andrew?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, Rudolph, thanks so much for coming and filling in the gaps for us on your invention that you've made. It's really cool.
Thank you very much for the opportunity.
I'm extremely impressed. Yeah. And if you want to let everybody know where they can check it out and look at some of your photography, I know you've got a webpage and you're on Instagram. So
thank you very much. Yeah. Well, you know, I'm thinking I would love to send out a camera out to the world. Maybe you guys can help me figure out how to go about sharing just on a loaner basis.
Sure.
Get beta testers.
Don't send one to Andrew. Send it to me first. No.
postage will be less if you send it to
Andrew, because he'll be able to give you nice long exposure examples.
Yeah.
Because it's so dreary. It'll probably be of the fins, though, so I hope you're cool with that.
Well, there are, there is a pinhole camera doing the rounds, Rudolph, run by Monty Smith.
Yep.
Have you had that yet, Corey?
It should be. I'm probably going to be, I feel like it should be showing up at my house any day now.
It's actually like a year ago since it sent off.
It's going to take a while.
I got it a year ago last January, I think. Wasn't it?
Yeah,
I think.
It hasn't been quite a year yet.
Has it been a year?
It's close.
Was it this year? When did I get it?
It was close this year. I actually was just thinking about that a little while ago, and I really feel like I should be seeing it with any day now within the next week to two, maybe, because the last time I checked it, it was just one or two stops away from me, and it's been a while since I've checked it. So,
yeah, that's a double exposure challenge, Rudolph. Yeah. You get a camera turn up, and it's got a roll of film in it. It's been rewound, a roll film, and then you go and put yours on top of it, and then you go and expose another roll and send it off to the next person.
Wow, so that's cool.
But if you wanted to float the idea, I'm not sure if you do Facebook or not, Rudolph, but even if you don't do Facebook, get involved and join our Lensless Podcast Facebook group, which is fantastically interactive, and there's all sorts of interesting folks hang out there.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be a good place if you wanted to, share one of your cameras, and you could drum up a bit of interest in the Facebook group, and get people who are serious who want to help, and beta testing.
Everyone there is legit.
You can trust them all
because
they all answer the question.
Yeah.
There's no everyone there is all good guys. So. The Lenses Podcast Facebook group.
Good guys and gals, Andrew.
Good guys and gals. Yeah. Well, I say guys and I mean everybody, really.
I know. The Royal.
So, yeah.
Cool. Okay.
Maybe check. So, share some stuff there, Rudolph. Share some pictures of your camera. If you wanted to do something like that, the Facebook group is a really good place, probably, to start.
Perfect. All right. I'll do that for sure.
Excellent.
Okay, Andrew, so what else you got to say?
Haven't I said enough?
Yeah, you have.
Well, I have to get 2 weeks' worth in because I'm not with you next week, am I?
Oh, that's right.
I'm off. The caravan's all clean. I've got the inflatable canoe ready to go, and we're off for 3 days canoeing and camping.
The inflatable canoe.
Inflatable canoe. Just pray for good weather. That's what we need.
Okay. Well.
All right. So I've no idea what you're up to next week, but good luck with that.
It's going to be a surprise. I'm not telling anyone.
Even to you, it's a surprise at this stage, I bet.
No, it's not. Barely a surprise, but you know.
Okay.
So yeah. So if, like Andrew said, if you want to check out the Facebook group, what's the name of the Facebook group, Andrew?
Large format photography. Oh no, it's not. The Lensless Podcast Facebook group.
Yeah. And Andrew handles the Twitter.
Yep.
And I'm on Instagram. It's Pinhole Cannon, and you can catch me there sometimes in the Facebook group. But that's about it. Andrew is the Flickr Twittery guy.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Okay, so yeah, so Rudolph, thanks again for coming in. And we hope everybody has a great week, and we'll talk to you soon.
Bye, everybody.
Thank you very much.
Bye.
Bye.
Hey, Andrew and Corey, this is Ethan from the Homemade Camera Podcast. We're having our first ever challenge, and we're hoping you guys and our listeners can join us in building a self-developing homemade camera that makes instant pictures. Here's a little conversation between Nick and I about the challenge rules and some of the things we're thinking about making.
So we're offering a challenge to anyone who likes building their own cameras. We'd like to see what people can do in terms of making a camera that can produce directly out of the camera or out of a contraption you carry with you in the field, a finished print or a negative. So the idea is that it's the homemade version of an instant camera. But we have a pretty broad definition of instant. Basically, we're interested in equipment that lets you produce an image out in the field. So this is associated with the traditional Afghan box camera where people would sell portraits on the street. And that's basically just a big box with a lens and a way to get your hands inside without letting light in so that you can develop the photograph inside the camera itself. You know, but it's manual, so you don't need any machinery. And then there's really simple ideas we've had, like just putting a pinhole in a developing tank, and then you just load it with a piece of paper, expose it, pour in the developer, pour in the fixer. That's a real simple version. And then really elaborate versions might include almost, you know, like a full darkroom in a box with an associated camera system. So anything that appeals to you would work. And what we want is for people to submit designs to through a website form on the Homemade Camera Podcast website. And there will be instructions on how to fill that out. Maybe you could explain that better, Ethan.
Yeah, to submit, we're going to want your name, your location. I guess, you know, city and country would be great. We're going to want the name of your camera, what the inspiration behind your camera was, whether it's based off of one or 10 or 25 other things or nothing at all. We'd like some pictures of the camera itself and some pictures taken with the camera. Bonus points for pictures of the camera in use. And pictures of the camera while it's being built. Extra bonus points for any YouTube or Instagram or any sort of video content you have of making the camera or using it. Yeah, I think that's how to enter. And there'll be a guest judge. We're hoping to get Andrew and Corey together for a joint podcast to look at all of these sometime in late November. And we'll bring in a guest judge to decide who the winner or winners are, although everybody will win a camera commensurate with how good a camera they built. And there will be some sort of homemade camera prize to be determined.
All right. That sounds really fun. I'm kind of excited about this one.
Yeah, me too. I've already started making one. I've been making a pinhole camera that is also a little bit of a developing tank for the purpose of making reversal prints inside of it. I've been driving all around town trying to buy either high concentration hydrogen peroxide from pool cleaners or hair care stores. I've not gotten it to quite work, but I've been to every beauty supply place in town this morning. And I'm either going to get there or give up and try something else by tomorrow.
Well, I was just thinking that if the black and white direct positive systems keep disappointing, you could always switch to an E6 process and just use color positive film.
you know, I've been working on a like a electronic bath developing system, much like a Noritsu that goes inside of a camera. We'll see if that's going to be worse, I'm sure.
How would that be worse?
Well, it's more complicated and more points for me personally to fail. But, you know, theoretically, it's much better.
Right. So you're just basically press the shutter and there's a lot of rumbling and gurgling. And like 10 minutes later, a slide pops out. Is that what you're thinking?
Yeah, which reminds me of another self-developing camera, which is the analog photo booth.
Yeah, same idea. Yeah. That was a direct positive, though?
Yeah, well, so it was a reversal process. So they develop first and then rinse, then bleach with a bleach that only binds to already developed silver salts. Ah. And then once those silver salts have been removed, you re-expose to white light and then redevelop, you know, developer stop and fix, and then you get an inverted or reversed print.
And is that, that's different than what you, well, it's not totally different. It's not that different than the direct positive paper process. It's kind of similar.
Yes, but I think a lot of the direct positive paper processes don't need a bleaching step. I'm not exactly sure how they do it. I'm no chemist, but maybe there's some chemical inside the paper that is activated.
Oh, okay.
Somehow. I hope somebody will tell us.
Yeah. Well, I've heard a number of different recipes, and not having tried it, I don't really know. But I've also heard people say they can get away with simple development of a direct positive paper, at least one brand. So.
Yeah, I've done that with Ilford Harmon. It was a little contrasty and a little bit expensive, but.
Oh, so you're just trying to improve the quality. Yeah. Okay. That's your idea with the bleach, that you just want a better grayscale.
Better grayscale. I like using RC paper because it doesn't curl as much, particularly out in the field. It's maybe a quarter the price, and you can get it in a lot of different finishes. I like it a bit better, but so far I've had very low success rate.